Well, markets are much more cautious on cuts now, except for people buying US shares. They don't seem to care too much. But for how long? More signs of persistent inflation in the United States. We get European inflation this week as well, of course. The FOMC meeting this week as well. Plus, non-farm payrolls and ISM numbers. It's a busy one. And does Donald Trump want to get his hands on the Fed? It's Monday, the 29th of April, 2024. It's the Morning Call from NAB. Good morning. Well, the US dollar edged up a third of 1% on Friday, with the euro down by about the same amount. But it didn't hurt the Aussie, which climbed a quarter percent on that rising US dollar up to 65.3 US cents. But the big move was a 1.7% fall in the yen. We'll come on to that today. Bond yields edged a little lower, down 4 basis points for 10-year treasuries. The same for 10-year gilts, down 5 basis points for 10-year bunds in Germany and Canada as well. Aussie 10 years, they were up 11 basis points on Friday, up to 4.52%, and actually only 1 basis point lower than that on futures now. And US equities were racing ahead again, over 2% up for the Nasdaq on Friday, 1% for the S&P, 0.4% for the Dow. It's not just a US story. The Euro Stoxx 50 rose 1.4% on Friday as well, although the ASX 200 didn't have that follow through from the United States, but maybe it will this morning. It was down 1.4% on Friday. And small rises in oil, 0.5% added to Brent, up to $89.50 a barrel, a third of 1% for WTI. Curious, isn't it? Markets performing a bit of a turnaround, except when it comes to equities. Maybe that won't last very long either. Here's NAB's Tapas Strickland returning after a reasonably long absence, and belated congratulations. You've got another member of the Strickland family.
Cheers. Thank you, Phil.
And I hope you got his name down for school, because you know how Sydney schools work. You've got to get on the waiting list pretty much the day you're born. Otherwise, you won't get in. So I hope you've done that. Anyway, let's look at how things are working. So core PC deflator numbers on Friday, the inflation number that the Fed likes to use. It seems like you can pick, it's one of these where you can pick your number. If you want bad news, you take the 3-month annualized number, which shows prices rising at 4.4%. If you want a good number, just look at March, which came in line with expectations. So it's a case of how full is your glass, Tapas?
Good morning, Phil. Yes, that March core PC inflation number was an interesting print and came in the context of a very high quarter average print. So that's the bigger picture story here. There was a little bit of a relief rally in bonds. So the core PC inflation deflator rose by 0.3, which is broadly as consensus was, though there were some fears it could print as high as 0.5% month to month following those Q1 GDP figures. But what it turned out was it was the prime months that were revised higher. In particular, January was revised higher. But as you noted, there is some worrying signs when you do look at the 3-month annualized around 4.4%. What that probably means for the US Fed is that they're going to become a little bit less certain about the pace of disinflation occurring, and that continues to push out the prospect of a rate cut in the US. Yeah. And if you recall, Fed Chair Powell in his post-FOMC press conference played down the higher readings in January and February, but as a Fed's Goolsbee said, I always say one is no month, but 3 months, there's at least one real month in there. And so I think that's the story that Fed officials will come to. So I think in the FOMC meeting that's on Wednesday of this week, they'll basically be pretty open to saying there's been less progress on getting inflation back to target. And so what does that mean? That just pushes out the case for rate hikes. And indeed, when you look at market pricing, markets are almost fully pricing the first rate cut in November. And that's a big change compared to where we were even last month.
And yeah, bond yields, we didn't see big moves at the end of the week, did we? But I guess we're going into what is quite a busy week with many moving parts. So plenty of opportunity for yields to move one way or the other.
That's right. The 2-year yield was a little changed, around 4.99%. And the 10-year yield, I think, was down by about 4 basis points to 4.66%. But as you know, those moves weren't that big. And really, the bigger moves occurred the day previous when you did get those Q1 GDP figures, which noted the March quarter average PCE was so much larger than expected. And there are 4 key US data points this week. Obviously, we get the US Treasury quarterly funding announcement. So we get the estimate on Monday and the more details on the Wednesday. And the prior one back in January did see a big prompt a rally in the US bond market. So I think people will be looking quite closely at how the US government is going in terms of funding itself. and the funding envelope in general. We obviously get the FOMC on Wednesday, where all expectations are for the Fed to be on hold, but there could be a little bit of progress on the balance sheet. They've been saying that they wanted to start to taper that. So we'd expect some movements on there. We get the ISMs on Wednesday and Friday, and the services ISM is the one to watch there, just given it did underperform last month. And then finally on Friday, we get payrolls as well.
Busy week.
Very, very busy week. And then to add to that, and maybe one reason why in the background, people are reluctant to really see a rally in yields, is in the Twitter sphere, there's a Wall Street Journal article from late Thursday, and it's gaining a lot of airtime. And that just highlights the fragility of the Fed's independence should an election clean sweep occur in November. And I'll just read you the headline. There's no need to discuss it, but the headline says it all. Trump allies draw up plans to blunt Fed's independence. Some Trump advisors argue that the president should be consulted on interest rate decisions. The headline says it all.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. And even actually, if he's not consulted and he allows them to be independent, at the very least, he seems to be saying, well, he's going to try and get rid of Jerome Powell so he can put in someone who, sees things the way he does. So he's going to have a controlling influence, whichever way you look at it. And of course, what he likes is low interest rates. That's actually where Donald Trump wants to be, of course, but is he going to be happy? Because it seems like we are going to be heading to a neutral rate, which is going to be, reasonably a bit higher than where we left off.
Oh, indeed. There are some good arguments for why you think the neutral rate of interest has risen. And the two big ones, really, is the soaring US government deficit. I was looking at the IMF Fiscal Monitor recently, and the US government primary deficit, so excluding interest payments, is running at 6% of GDP. And that is an economy that has a positive output gap. So no surprise there, really, why inflation has been perpetuating in the US. A similar story actually in New Zealand as well, not to the same extent. And in Australia, we have still a fairly sizable output gap there. While the budget deficit the budget is in balance with a small surplus there. So I think there are some good reasons in the US why the level of the neutral rate may have risen in this cycle, and that's mainly due to the fiscal side.
So we get the US Treasury quarterly funding announcement, don't we, this week as well? So will that influence that in any way?
It could. I think most people think coupon issuance won't be all that move. So I think the numbers on Wednesday shouldn't be all that market moving, but the numbers that come out today on Monday, which is the estimate, could be interesting.
Right. The big move on Friday, of course, was the yen after no action from the Bank of Japan. I mean, there was some hope that they'd do something to help boost the currency, but rates stayed put. But next time, perhaps, do you reckon? Is that what's going to happen?
Oh, it's a tough one in the sense that when you look at the Tokyo inflation figures that also came out on Friday, there's no real signs of a durable acceleration in the rate of inflation. So you look at the Tokyo CPI, the core measure, and it came out at 1.8% year on year versus 2.7% expected. There were some government education subsidies that was some of the driver of the miss, and goods inflation was also weak. But either way, it suggests the yen is yet to have much of an impact on prices. And indeed, that statement by Governor Ueda, which was currency weakness was having no major impact on inflationary pressures so far, was one of the reasons why the yen fell so much overnight.
Yeah,
fell so much on Friday.
So, if you look at the Bank of Japan's forecasts, so for next year, they're saying, inflation's going to go from, originally they were forecasting 1.8%, they're saying 1.9%, big deal.
Yeah, that's right. And from a communications perspective, it just underlies the point that inflation seems to be hard to get a durable cycle underway in Japan. So that continued policy divergence between Japan and the rest of the world, and indeed in other places of the world, such as the Eurozone, is likely to be a feature for 2025. And the key question will be, how do countries react to that? We had the Bank of Indonesia mid last week undertaking a surprise rate hike in order to support the rupiah. So I think that's an interesting development. The longer this monetary policy divergence goes on, the more pressure I think Asian currencies in particular will come under. That also has some pretty important implications for the Australian dollar, just given that the Chinese have lost export competitiveness with Japan, just given the rapid depreciation in the yen, and the same thing with Koreans as well. So I think there are some really interesting areas to look out for in the months ahead.
So is that having a material impact, though? I mean, I've seen pictures of ports in Europe absolutely jam solid with the arrivals of electric vehicles from China. Is Japan going to be able to ramp up exports enough to, for example, in EVs to undercut China's, you know, based on the exchange rate?
It's a good question. Not a EV analyst, unfortunately, but it does seem to suggest at least the ramp up in exports from China is starting to get the ire of a lot of the authorities in the US and Eurozone as well. So I'd expect some trade actions to follow on. Yeah. The back of that as well.
All right. Well, not much today. We mentioned the Treasury refunding estimates. I think that's early tomorrow. The Dallas Fed Manufacturing Index. We get inflation numbers for Germany and Spain, and that's ahead of the full Eurozone inflation number tomorrow. Have we got expectations for that?
The consensus for the core Eurozone one is for core to sit at 2.6% year on year. I think most ECB officials are on board with the rate cut in June, so those numbers will be quite important just to see whether market pricing for further cuts or the pace of cuts is justified. It is interesting that the inflation pulse in Europe seems to be a little bit dimmer than, say, in the US, so that should drive monetary policy divergence throughout this week. The other important one that I'll be looking out for is the official PMIs out of China on Tuesday. You did see the March activity data disappoint, particularly on the manufacturing and on the retail side. So expectations are for a fallback in terms of the pace of manufacturing and non-manufacturing activity. Closer to home in Australia, we get retail sales on Tuesday. That's going to be complicated by the early Easter that we've had. We've penciled in a modest 0.1% month-to-month outcome, but it could pretty much print anywhere, I think. And then the other important one is obviously what's going on in New Zealand, particularly just given their inflation figures on the non-tradable side seem a little high. We get their employment data on Wednesday, and it'll be interesting to watch to see whether that recent rise in unemployment rate is sustained or not.
All right, well, there we are. So you haven't lost it, Tapas. You've been off all this time. You come back. You deliver it all in a succinct 12 minutes. That's what we like to see. We'll catch you again next time. Thanks.
That's it. I think so.
I think we just have to work on the quality of his sound for the next time he's on, don't we? That was awful. But anyway, we are back again tomorrow morning with another edition of The Morning Call. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. I'll see you then. Thanks for listening.